This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 24. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books. Whether you like epic fantasy, or you read urban fantasy, or you like every other kind of fantasy out there, you can expect to find the best and brightest from all the various corners of the fantasy book world here on the program. To kick things off this week, let me chat a little bit about my current projects. About a month ago, I released Cyber's Change, a dystopian sci-fi novel that started off a trilogy called Sapien's Run. That book's actually been pretty well received. I'm excited about how things have gone with the launch. People seem to be enjoying it. It's also available on audiobook, so I thought I'd mention that here because people who listen to podcasts probably listen to audiobooks too, at least some of you, I suspect, do. So for you that are audiobook listeners, you may want to catch that podcast, that audiobook over in wherever you buy audiobooks, whether it's Audible or audiobooks.com or Kobo or Apple Books, wherever, you can find it over there. I'm currently working on the third and final book in that series, Cyber's Underground, and each of these books are released simultaneously with the audiobook. So if you are tired of waiting for the audiobook to come out in tandem with the print and ebook, well, I'm trying to fix that by putting all my books out at the same time. So hopefully that helps those of you who've been used to waiting around for audiobooks out a little bit. As always, if you're interested in finding out more of what I'm up to or getting notified about that, you can check out my fan group over on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Superfans, or my author page, which is at Jamie Davis Books on Facebook. Also, my website and blog, jamiedavisbooks.com. All right, let's shift gears and talk a little bit about our special guest for this episode. Tora Moon writes all genres of fantasy, and she especially loves to write stories which allow the reader to journey into worlds full of magic and escape their ordinary lives for a little bit. You know, ancient cultures, religions, mythology, folklore, all those things fascinate her, probably just like they fascinate you. And that's how they find their way into her stories, because she's so fascinated with them. So besides reading, she enjoys sewing, crocheting, and even making wire-wrapped jewelry. Her love of travel has taken her to several countries and saw her living in an RV for several years. She makes her home in the southwestern desert with her feline companion. Check out my chat with Tora right now. Tora, welcome to the Fantasy Focus podcast. It's great to have you on the show talking about our books and our projects, and I'm really excited to jump in and chat about yours a little bit.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here and happy to talk with you about books, one of my favorite things.
Me too. Before we get into that, though, I'm sure some of our listeners have heard of you and read some of your books, but others may not have, so this is your chance to introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Tora Moon, and I write fantasy and all genres of fantasy. My current series is an epic fantasy, and my work in progress is an urban fantasy. So I like exploring different things, and I like exploring places and people who aren't necessarily human.
And that's evident in the book that I'm actually reading, the first book in the Legend of Lerheim series, and really enjoying it. And it's certainly a twist on the genre. So I'm looking forward to digging into that a little bit, because you're right. They're not necessarily human, are they?
No, and I tried very hard not to use the word human, because it's set in a secondary planet, a world that's not Earth. It has two continents. One is more like an island than a continent. And so they evolved differently than we did.
It's very interesting, and I haven't gotten too far into it yet. I just started it yesterday, so bear with me. But I really have enjoyed getting into what I got into. In fact, I didn't get some work done today because I was caught up reading some stuff, which
is always
a good thing.
A good sign.
Yeah. Before we get into talking more about that, though, I'm curious what's got you started writing. I know you have a background in as a CPA, I believe. What started you down the course of writing, or is that something you've always done as well as be a CPA?
I've always been a writer. I think I started writing as soon as I started reading. But being a single mom, I needed an income that was steady, so I went into accounting. And I'm glad that I did, because it's giving me the good background to manage my author business the way that it needs to be managed, and treat my business as a business, not just as a hobby. I started my first story, serious novel story, when I was 18. I never finished that because computers crashed and lost the story. Learned my lesson of backing up. And I've just kept writing as I did the accounting, coming back to it. And then I retired from it a few years ago and heard about the NaNoWriMo. And I talked my sister into doing it with me. And we both finished our 50,000 words and have since published. And the story that I worked on for the NaNoWriMo was Ancient Enemies.
That's exciting. You know what? I got dared by somebody a few years back to do NaNoWriMo. That's what got me started writing.
Yeah, I thought it was the kick in the pants that I needed to actually finish a story and take my writing seriously rather than just play with it. So I really appreciate it.
Yes, but I was told you tell great stories, you should write them down. And NaNoWriMo is the perfect opportunity to do that. And that's my first novel actually sprung out of that first NaNoWriMo. So that's really cool. Did you have the idea for Ancient Enemies rolling around in your head for a while? Is that something that was kind of kicking around that gave you the impetus to write it down?
Yeah, I got the idea for it watching the first season of Sci-Fi's Face Off, where they do the face painting and face makeup.
That's a cool show.
It's a cool show. And the finale with the three people, they were doing fairy tales in different settings. So one guy had Little Red Riding Hood as a dystopian. And the scene that he came up was just so mesmerizing for me that I just kept thinking about it and kept thinking about it. It was this cool woman dressed in red leather holding this cool Gatling gun and fighting a white werewolf. And I was like, ooh, that's just really cool. The only thing that stayed was, yes, I have werewolves, they're shifters, and the women wear red leather. That was about it.
Yeah, but it's funny how ideas pop into your head and then morph into your own thing just based on a single image like that, that single, you know, portrayal of a concept.
Yeah, it's amazing where ideas come up from. You see something like that, you have a dream, you're thinking, well, what if this happened? You know, I don't have trouble coming up with ideas. You know, you can go to some place, like I went to Shalimar Gardens in Pakistan. And that just really brought in some cool ideas that I'm playing around with for a story.
And let's talk about that a little bit, because I noticed that you did quite a bit of traveling. And I'm curious, you know, how often did you find inspiration on those trips? Were they trips that where you were purposely looking to find inspiration, or were they just happy accidents as part of a vacation?
I went to Pakistan twice, to Lahore, because the company I was the CFO for had operations in Lahore. So I needed to go there for the financial audits. And one of the great things is they showed me around. And so I got to see Lahore Fort and Shalimar Gardens and there was a Wazi Khan Mosque and the Grand Mosque and some other places that most Westerners, and especially women, don't get to see. So that was amazing. I've gone to London and England and out to Stonehenge. We did a bus tour for that. And as we were getting there, my daughter, who was 15 at the time, looked at me and she goes, "Mom, please don't do anything weird."
What was she afraid you were going to do?
Well, I've done a lot of magic in my own life. That's how I pulled the magic in for my stories. I've studied Wicca and other types of magic systems. And so she was afraid I would do something really weird.
That's funny. You know, my daughter went on a trip in college to England, and she went to Stonehenge. And she sent us back a bunch of pictures of the birds on the grass around Stonehenge. In the background, in one of them, you can actually see Stonehenge. But The rest of them were crows and stuff that she was fascinated by. She's an odd duck. But we still pull those pictures out now and then. Hey, I want to show you these great pictures of Stonehenge.
Yeah, that's really interesting. The only stones around there are the great, big, huge monoliths. Yeah, a friend asked me, "Bring me back a stone or a pebble." And it was like, I couldn't find any. There was nothing there, just grass.
I guess they cleaned it out, huh? Probably. And it's interesting when you go to places like that. I mean, I've never been to Europe. I have been to Indonesia and recently on a trip. And I'm struck by the ancient cultures there. We're so, here in the United States, everything is so new compared to the rest of the world that I think we don't have an appreciation for the depth of culture that is present in other parts of the world that have a more ancient foothold of their indigenous people there.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's amazing. I've been down to the temples in Mazatlan and near Belize. And those are just so amazing at the structures and the energy that you feel off of them and just the culture, how old they are. And we just don't have anything in the U.S. like that.
So you mentioned magic and how you bring some of the things that you've learned in your own life and bring them into your magic systems. I'm really curious about the magic system in the Legends of Laerheim series because it's very unique. It's the women possess the magic and the men possess the shape-shifting and it's a very defined role system. That's just really unique. It's not something I've seen necessarily in a lot of other books.
No, haven't seen it either. And I have had a few reviews that have said that my stories are very unique, which as an author, you want to hear that. It was playing with the idea of doing elemental magic. And that's how I came up with using their hair and eye color for the women to determine what kind of magic they do. It's very elemental magic with the reds doing fire and the yellows doing air magic. Greens would be doing earth magic, working with plants. And people with brown hair would be doing earth magic, dealing with either animals or stones or metal. The whites, which are not very many, and they're the spiritual leaders, and they deal with the soul magic. And the grays, which is a very rare quality, are the ones who deal with the mind magic, and they're the psychologist and the psychiatrist for the people. Blues work with water. I just thought it was a cool way to differentiate the kind of magic that they do and why they can do the magic that they can do. There's nobody with purple hair because water and fire don't mix.
Right.
And then going into the backstory and their mythology and their deeper culture, the reason that the men changed, at one point, men had the same type of magic. But after what they called their Great War, the monsters appeared. And they couldn't fight them with just their magic. And so the goddess offered them the opportunity to exchange their elemental magic for the magic of doing, of shape-shifting and going into that warrior form that could fight and defeat the monsters.
Yeah, and I don't want any spoilers out there because I know people are going to want to check these books out. But I'm really starting to really wonder where these monsters are coming from because it's got me scratching my head. So that's pretty
You will find that out in book 4.
Oh, great.
Yes, there is a progression. And there is a definite story arc for the entire series, and the series is done. But I left it open that I can explore more things in this world if I want to, tell more stories. Because in book 3, I like mashups. So book 3 has an alien invasion. And the aliens brought with them several slave species. And one of those slave species escape and help the Pusseyers defeat the aliens. And so now you have, instead of a homogeneous society, you have this new culture added in. And I think that'll play out in some really great stories in the future.
Oh, that sounds awesome. And that's, of course, in you're talking about the most recent book, book 5, Legends of Lerheim Redemption.
Yeah. That's actually a prequel.
Oh, okay. So Exile's Vengeance is book 4 then.
Yes, Exile's Vengeance is book 4. Redemption, it happens 18 years before Ancient Enemies. And it's the story of Roselia's parents, how her mom dies, and how they came up with the method that the fighters use in Ancient Enemies to surround the monster nests with fire, and how they inverted the fire magic so it goes down instead of up. That was some interesting research there.
Now that's very interesting. And I think people will enjoy these books. I noticed, just for people's reference, book 1 is 99 cents. Is that typically where you leave it so that people have a good entry into your series?
Yes, I leave it. It's perma 99 cents. I don't want to give it for free, but a good introductory price that people can do that. Or if they sign up for my mailing list, they can get it for free.
That's awesome. I actually do much the same thing. A lot of my first in series books are available for free as different mailing list offers at different times. So that's pretty cool. Now I'm going to jump ship a little bit here. We talked about the Legends of Lerheim, but you mentioned something that's kind of in my neck of the woods, talking about a current urban fantasy project. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I'm about 3/4 of the way done with book 2 in that series, and it's the Sentinel Witches. It's an urban fantasy set in where I spent the last 25, 26 years in Southern California in Orange County. And the main character is Catelyn, and she starts out as she reads tarot. She does sound healing with crystal bowls. She does jewelry wrapping. And she just thinks she's just a normal hippie girl and starts seeing these strange things, and they're demons. And the other main character of the story is Sean McLarkin, who is a homicide detective. And he's starting to see a lot of crimes that are committed that people are saying, I don't know what happened. They don't remember doing it. And the devil made them do it. And it's the demons that's causing the problem. And these two find out that they're part of an ancient society of witches called the Sentinels. And they've been genetically changed and altered so that they can do magic here at this time. And their job is to protect the portals on Earth from the demons and keep them from coming through.
That sounds awesome. And it's got the typical, you know, and I say typical because it's a trope, not because mm-hmm. it's something that is not unique in many ways, but you know, that hidden world aspect of urban fantasy, which is so important. I know in my first series, The Extreme Medical Services, it's about a paramedic who discovers that he's been assigned to the station that takes care of the supernatural creatures in the city that no one knows about, and his adventures. And that was a lot of fun, you know, kind of exploring these people that live alongside everybody else that you don't know that they're werewolves and witches and vampires and whatnot. I had a lot of fun exploring a lot of different mythologies from different cultures to come up with new creatures that he encounters on his days on the ambulance.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Yeah. One of the things I've done with Sentinel Witches is because they are so ancient, I tried to find an ancient language to use for their spells. And so I found a Babylonian, Sumerian dictionary, and so I'm pulling words out of that to use for their magic.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, they can't use Latin. Latin's too, you know, too new.
No, I think you need to go back to like a prototypical, you know, early language. That's great. Wow, that's well, I'm going to have something else to read when that comes out. So.
Well, I'm waiting to get at least the first three books of this series done before I publish them so that I can do a rapid release. And I have about 8 books planned in this series.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I do the same thing. I try to kind of bunch my books up because I think people enjoy getting at least a burst of the beginning of the story at one time.
Yeah, I like that in myself because I read a lot as well. When I do cross promotions through Book Funnel or other places, I usually try to pick up 1 or 2 books that I haven't read from other indie authors and read them. And if I really like them, I review them on my newsletter and on my website. And it's just one of the ways that I like to give back to the indie community. And I'm almost 90% indie author reading now.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I do a lot of indie author reading myself as an indie myself. And there's some really creative people out there that I think the traditional publishers are too stuck in their rut in many ways. Mm-hmm. That they don't want to take a chance on something new and exciting. And as a result, they miss out on something that really is top notch.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I consider myself an indie publisher in that I do everything that a traditional publisher would do. I don't have the funds that they do, but I get professional covers done. I have my work edited professionally. I do my marketing. You know, I consider myself a professional author rather than self-published with somebody who thinks that they can just, oh, it's easy to write a book. Well, to write a good book, it's hard. But indie authors who are really taking it seriously, treating it like a business, write just as good or better stories as those that are traditionally published.
And they can produce their works faster than the traditional industry allows them to.
Oh, yeah. I was at a writers' conference in February, and a lot of the people on the panel were traditionally published. They're saying, oh, yeah, I got my book done. It'll come out in 2 years. And it's like, I can do that in 6 months or less.
Yep. Yeah, I completely agree. Just going to shift gears here, because I know there's a lot of authors that listen to this. Tell us a little bit about money management for authors. I know a lot of people, you know, artists, I, for one, am not good with numbers. It's not my thing. Luckily, I married a math major who now works in finance for a major banking corporation in the country. And so she handles all of our money things as our business CFO, but not everybody's lucky enough to have that in, you know, married into their business. So,
or studied it and did it for 25 years.
Right, right. So tell us a little bit, just briefly, about what Money Management for Authors might offer for some of those people that are indie authors listening to the show.
I wrote it from an author point of view. So it's, I talk about whether you should use ISBNs or not. I talk a little bit about your production schedules. So the first part of it is just basic business management from an author perspective and focus. Talking a little bit about whether you should incorporate, do an LLC, or just be a DBA. I'm just a DBA. It's easy to form, and it's all that I need. I'm not doing any type of stories that I think I'm going to get sued for. So I don't think I need an LLC. So I talk about some of that, how you pay yourself if you're self-employed, because if you've been in a job and a W-2, get a W-2 and need a paycheck, it's like, how do I pay myself? And so I cover some of that in the book. And I also, the second half of the book is talking about some basic accounting things that you need to set up and keep track of. And I do provide a chart of accounts that you can use with QuickBooks, Xero, or any of the other accounting software that's out, or a basic Excel spreadsheet that says, here's what I have that I've spent for the month and the income that I have that you can use to keep track of your finances. And it's really important because you need to know whether you're making money or not for your campaigns and in your business. And I kept being hit over the head. You need to write this book. You need to write this book. And I was like, but I'm an author. I don't want to be doing accounting. But it's my service back to the indie world, publishing world, and other authors of, hey, this is something I understand. Hopefully I've written it in a way that is easy to understand and help your business as well.
No, that sounds like a great tool for authors. I'll make sure I link to that in the show notes as well for everybody, because that's something I think we all need. And like you said, not everybody's as lucky to have either done this as a career or have married into the opportunity to have someone do it for you. So that's something to definitely keep track of. Kind of as we,
and I don't want accounting clients.
No,
I'm an author.
We're not getting you accounting clients.
So I didn't write.
Get the book.
So I didn't write. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Go ahead. Get the book and find your own accountant.
Yep, that's exactly it. It's like, here's some basics to think about, but get your own accountant. I didn't write it to get accounting clients.
No, that's great. Well, as we kind of wrap up here, I've kind of doing something a little new with the podcast, with the most recent episodes I'm recording, and I thought I'd give you an opportunity to pitch your book. So pitch Ancient Enemies. Tell people why you think this might be the book for them to pick up and give a try to.
Well, if you like strong leading women who can kick ass but are still feminine and compassionate, if you like shapeshifters and magic, then you'll love my books. They're unique and fun, and I hope you enjoy them.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community, both on Facebook and over at our website, fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode and let me know what's on your mind. Also on this website, you'll find the podcast episode posts. And if you look there just below the audio player at the top of the page, you'll find links where you can subscribe to the show depending on what your mobile device is. So if you have an iOS device or an Android device, heck, you can even subscribe by email if you want. But make sure you do subscribe, because that's how you're going to find out what's coming up in the upcoming episodes. And we've got some pretty awesome authors scheduled over the next couple of months, including, and I'm really excited about this, Ryan Kirk. He'll be on the very next podcast. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and on my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book over there if you sign up for my newsletter. And I would love to hear from you as well. So make sure you reach out to me. Whatever you do over there, though, make sure you come back here and subscribe for the next podcast. In the meantime, I'll remind you, as I always do each and every week, to remember to keep your eyes open, folks, because there's magic all around you.